WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present the Lopez for Liberty Report with your host, Claire Lopez. Claire has served as a member of the Citizens Commission on Benghazi and continues among the members of its successor organization, the Citizens Commission on National Security. She's formerly vice president of the Intelligence Summit. She was a career operations officer with the Central Intelligence Agency, a professor at the Center for Counterintelligence and Security Studies, and executive director of the Iran Policy Committee from 2005 to 2006. She's also served as a consultant and intelligence analyst and researcher for a variety of defense firms. Already an advisor to EMP Act America, she has also been named a member of the Congressional Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Claire has been a visiting researcher and guest lecturer on counterterrorism, national defense, and international relations at Georgetown University. She's the author of the book, The Rise of the Iran Lobby, Sharia, the Threat to America, and The Secure Freedom Strategy, a Plan for Victory Over the Global Jihad. And now, here is your host, Claire Lopez.
Hello again. This is Claire Lopez with Lopez Liberty, LLC. I have been presenting a set of presentations about Hezbollah. It is a 12-part series. We are now at segment number 11. This is rather a shorter segment, perhaps, than some of the others, but I think it's important to go into a little bit of background in this segment 11 out of 12 about Hezbollah's intelligence operations capabilities. So let's get started with a look at intelligence tradecraft that Hezbollah has, and again, from especially the Iranian intelligence service. Now, as you see here on this slide, Hezbollah operatives are trained by the Iranian IRGC intelligence unit and also by the MOIS. Now, as you may know, in Iran, there are multiple intelligence services. The IRGC, or Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, has its own intelligence service. And then there is the cabinet-level ministry department, the Ministry of Intelligence and Security. And sometimes, honestly, these two are a little bit in competition, rivalry. But the point being here that Hezbollah is trained by the IRGC's intelligence unit and by the overall national MOIS intelligence organization. Now, remember, too, that Iranian intelligence officers, be they IRGC or the MOIS, have been trained directly by the Russian intelligence services, the KGB, and therefore, their tradecraft is pretty good. Now, what are the priorities for Iranian intelligence? What are their objectives? Strategic infiltration is what I would say. It is not necessarily stealing secrets, you know, spying and stealing away secrets, the nuclear codes or something like that. No, it is rather to pursue influence operations and to exert influence through information operations against us and other Western targets. So whom do they target? Well, academic sympathizers, perhaps in Middle East studies programs of top U.S. Universities. They target law enforcement. They want to target the local level police squads or sheriff's department. Why? Because as we've looked at in previous segments of this 12-part series, Hezbollah operatives in the United States are engaged in a great deal of criminality. So if you want top cover, as it were, you want to infiltrate the local law enforcement units and agencies. also, of course, as we have talked about, Hezbollah operatives in the United States typically live among and find cover within local Lebanese Shiite communities. And so they would want to co-opt at a minimum the top leadership figures, as we talked about some of the sympathizers or even some of the actual Hezbollah operatives, let's say within local business communities, that would help Hezbollah operatives not only to provide cover to them, but also to help them with things like money laundering, help them with things like moving people and equipment. I think earlier in the series we talked about using, for instance, a travel agency. That's helpful for moving people from place to place. Useful also would be an import-export kind of business that would be helpful in moving items, whatever they may be. Remember, we talked about how Hezbollah uses some of its ill-gotten gains to purchase otherwise proscribed high-tech military gear. Well, and if you want to ship that, if you want to send it from one place to another, wouldn't an import-export business be useful? So you see what I'm getting at here with the kinds of businesses among the Arab, the Lebanese, the Muslim communities that Hezbollah would look to for co-opting. Naturally, of course, they're going to want to infiltrate our national level intelligence agencies like the CIA, like the FBI. And as we'll see going forward here in this segment, Hezbollah has had some level of success at penetrating even those national level agencies. Obviously, for propaganda purposes, for information operation purposes, Hezbollah is going to want to co-opt different media. In other words, radio, TV, internet, sites that they can use for themselves to put out their own propaganda on behalf of themselves, on behalf of their state sponsor of terror, Iran. And then finally, they would want to be infiltrating the military, meaning the war colleges, for example, Department of Defense, the Pentagon. And that obviously is a key target. I think we can all see why. Now, we have talked before about how the Iranians and also Hezbollah use mosques and Islamic centers as places for cover. Alberto Nisman, remember, the Argentinian prosecutor who investigated the 1994 Buenos Aires Jewish Cultural Center bombing, in his very voluminous 500-plus page indictment, did talk about the broader set of operations conducted by Iran in the Western Hemisphere. And he specifically noted that Iran uses mosques and Islamic centers as cover. The IRGC, again, the Quds Force would be doing this. Certain mosques that are clearly Shiite mosques, some with names like Imam Ali or Ahl al-Bayt, those could potentially possibly be such cover places or places for cover positions for either operatives outright themselves or at the very least co-opted clerics and imams within those mosques. Now, there are, as you see on this page, a couple of specific units that we know of with the IRGC and the Quds Force that have been identified as having these kinds of responsibilities to infiltrate mosques and Islamic centers. Now, let's look again at the capabilities of Hezbollah intelligence operations, their methods and their means. They are quite adept at clandestine operations. And again, this comes from their training by way of the IRGC, its intelligence unit, and also by way of intelligence training from the MOIS. Intelligence collection, top-notch, certainly a top priority. And then, you know, the fundraising operations, which one might not necessarily think of as an intelligence operation, but if you think of all of this as integrated, as indeed it is within Hezbollah, administratively speaking, then even the manipulation of charity front groups, let's say, for fundraising, monetary collection, Those could be manipulated by the Hezbollah intelligence services as another way of bringing in funding. So that is why that is in this category. And then, of course, Hezbollah definitely relies on its broad network of sympathizers, fellow travelers, to use a phrase from an earlier period, which are altogether counted on by Hezbollah leadership to provide support in many different ways, including intelligence and the propaganda information operations. Now, let's talk about some of the online platforms that Hezbollah might use and how they might use those. Certainly, social media would be a big platform for Hezbollah to use for things like getting propaganda out, pro-Hezbollah, pro-Iran propaganda, also for meeting and potentially eventually recruiting new followers, new supporters. And then, of course, as they get further into these kinds of operations, Hezbollah would be adept at using encrypted messaging services, and they do. They will use these online platforms not just for the recruitment kind of operations, but for plotting and other support to the global Hezbollah cell network. Building those cells, extending the network out here in the United States as well as elsewhere, is all part of the Hezbollah intelligence operation. Now, what kind of online methodology might we expect to see from Hezbollah? Well, obviously they're going to use the social media platforms like Facebook, and that might be a place where Hezbollah would make initial contact with someone. They might observe postings that seem to be sympathetic to them, to Iran, and that might be the way they will first approach somebody to just test them out and see if they might be willing to go further and into a further and a deeper relationship. And then that relationship might be developed online over time. Once Hezbollah operatives online would be secure, convinced that the person with whom they're in contact is ready to go further, then they might switch over with instructions to get onto an encrypted communication platform, including encrypted email, as a further method of security. The handlers, the Hezbollah intelligence operations handlers, typically will use false names and always remain anonymous to those that they are approaching, perhaps, you know, for recruitment purposes. And then they will offer their new contacts, perhaps money. And this has happened. I mean, we know from cases already brought into court and indictment and prosecution that these are tried and true methods, that money eventually has been promised and also paid to some of these new Hezbollah recruits. Now, a lot of this that we're talking about right here does take place in the Middle East arena, with Israel, of course, being a number one top target for Hezbollah. It does occur elsewhere around the world, yes, including here in the United States too. But let's say in the Middle East, the Israeli intelligence services are highly sophisticated too, and very often are able to counter such online Hezbollah intelligence operations. Let's look here at least one case that came into public view because of prosecution more than 10 years ago now. This was in 2008, and it is the Nadia Nadim Prouty case. Her full name, her birth name, Al-Awar. Now, what happened is that she was a Hezbollah operative, and she managed somehow to penetrate and find employment to work inside both the CIA and the FBI before being caught and her operation stopped. Now, despite what at least in retrospect, in hindsight, turned out to be discoverable family terrorist ties, and marriage and citizenship fraud that she had committed, she was somehow cleared to receive security clearances at these national level U.S. intelligence services. Now, what happened is that after she got those security clearances and she had access inside computer systems at first the FBI, she used that computer access to check out whether the FBI were onto some of her family members, were tracking or aware of the activities, illicit Hezbollah activities of some of her relatives. I guess it was eventually some of that online activity that brought her to the attention of counterintelligence. And I don't know exactly how this happened either, but somehow, even though she had she was no longer in those employment positions with CIA or FBI, she was never deported, to the best of my knowledge. And according to the latest information I was able to find, she's even reapplied for U.S. citizenship. Heads up, please. All right. On more than one occasion, unfortunately, it looks like the United States intelligence community has lost networks of its informants inside of both Iran and Lebanon. The only way we know about this is, of course, because it came into the public media arena, where it was possible to read about it in newspapers and online sites. Unfortunately, it looks like some of these losses were due to sloppy tradecraft and perhaps a sophisticated analysis by the Iranians, by Hezbollah, into cell telephone network use. So the question mark has to be, have Hezbollah and or Iran succeeded any further in penetration of our top level intelligence agencies? Now, I will go back to May 2013 for this particular case here, and this one looks like an attempted penetration of our U.S. national security agencies, an attempt that was foiled, thankfully speaking. So May 2013, an accused Hezbollah operative by the name of Wissam Alush applied for a DOD, Department of Defense, security clearance. And he had been a linguist at a private company, but a federal contractor company called L3 Communications. And he was seeking U.S. citizenship at this time, too. But he did cause alert to himself, and he was arrested by the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force. And he was charged with failing in that citizenship quest, charged with failing full disclosure that he, in fact, was a Hezbollah commander. All right. We know that at least in some years past, there was serious U.S. congressional attention focused on some of these capabilities and operations in the intelligence realm by Hezbollah. Now, we're going back quite a few years here to the year 2010, when then Republican Senator Sue Myrick from the state of North Carolina asked Department of Homeland Security to form a task force to investigate Hezbollah and its cooperation with the Mexican drug cartels. Remember Operation Cassandra, right? Another senator was Senator John Kyle at that time from Arizona, who also sought to focus attention on Hezbollah operations here in the United States. And he was concerned that both Iran and Hezbollah were targeting the homeland. Well, as we know, certainly they were and are. Now, in March of 2012, Representative Peter King from New York convened hearings in Congress, open hearings, on the, quote, the Iran-Hezbollah threat to the homeland. Very important hearings. And in those hearings, it was emphasized that Iran and Hezbollah have a worldwide capability and presence in intelligence matters, as well as all of the other kinds of criminality and other terror kinds of networks across the world. The hearings exposed that Hezbollah is expanding its cell network across the Americas, meaning the whole Western Hemisphere, and of course made the point that Hezbollah is a wholly owned terror proxy subsidiary of the number one state sponsor of terror in the world, and that is Iran. So those were very important hearings convened by Representative Peter King. Some of the things that I would point to and hope that would be remedied, perhaps, would be the fact that no president since the attacks of 9/11, meaning President George W. Bush, President Barack Obama, or even now President Donald Trump as of yet, has actually openly and seriously held both Iran and Hezbollah to account for the attacks of 9/11 and the direct material support to Al-Qaeda during that operation. Now, I've mentioned before in earlier segments of this series about the Havlisch case, and I'm sure our viewers and listeners will recall that the Havlisch case was decided by Judge George Daniels in late December of 2011 with a ruling that both Iran and Hezbollah were co-responsible with Al-Qaeda for the attacks of 9/11. Now, what kind of intelligence operations have succeeded to this date, February 2020 here, where we are now, have succeeded in suppressing that judge's ruling and that involvement by Iran and Hezbollah in those attacks? Is that a successful information operation at suppressing that information over all of this time? Now, let me mention, as I actually did in an earlier segment of this series, but I want to talk about the Hezbollah co-option of the Lebanese Maronite Catholic Church, because I think this could be a potentially important and serious vehicle, if you will, for infiltration to the United States, not just in Lebanon. So the Maronite Catholic Church, in the wake of the 1975-1990 Lebanese Civil War, became co-opted by Hezbollah, which became its protector in Lebanon. Understandable, they had been the Christian forces, the Maronite forces in Lebanon, had been outnumbered, outgunned by the much more numerous Sunni militias in that war. And I suppose it was a natural thing for them to turn to the Shiites, to Hezbollah, for protection. But what that meant was that cooperation, that collaboration in Lebanon, caused the Maronite Catholic Church to become essentially co-opted and subordinate to Hezbollah, and thereby to Iran. Now, Patriarch Boutros, he is also a cardinal of the Catholic Church, the Vatican, Rai, is known throughout Lebanon as the Hezbollah Patriarch. That's what they call him, because of that close relationship with Hezbollah. Now, that's over there. That's over there in Lebanon. But the problem would be if that relationship were used, as indeed the Soviets and the Russians have used, the KGB has used, its co-option, for example, of the Russian Orthodox Church for projection of influence, propaganda, and power abroad, including here in the United States. And so I think from a counterintelligence perspective, it is reasonable and it is prudent to take note of that relationship between the Maronite Catholic Church and Hezbollah in Lebanon and at least be open to the question mark of whether that relationship has been exported over here to the United States. Now, as we do know, there is a broad network of Maronite Catholic churches and the entire network of the church hierarchy here in the United States. And on this slide here, you see some of those listed. Here are photos of that relationship between the patriarch, Boutros Rai, for example, in one 2016 photo here, with Michel Aoun, the Maronite community leader who is now president of Iran. And then you see Michel Aoun in the next photo over, posing in front of Hezbollah and Iranian flags with the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah. Here is another photo, a group photo in this case, of the Maronite Church Patriarch and Cardinal Rai meeting with an entire delegation of Hezbollah that included members of Hezbollah's political council. So these are not lower ranking. These are very high ranking officials of Hezbollah. And we see the relationship there. One more photograph of these kinds of meetings held between Maronite senior, Maronite Catholic Church, the Patriarch Rai, and Hezbollah, a Hezbollah a delegation. And here we see in 2016, Cardinal Rai and a Hezbollah delegation, again led by a very high-ranking Politburo head of Hezbollah, Sayed Ibrahim Amin al-Sayed, and that meeting took place with photographs taken to memorialize it. The photographs online, easily accessible. Now, the question mark again becomes, does that relationship extend here over into the United States? Question mark. I think a very serious counterintelligence question that at least needs to be considered. So here was an event, and I want to highlight this, back in 2014 when Senator Ted Cruz from Texas was invited to speak at a group event for In Defense of Christians, and at their gala event in 2014. And unfortunately, this is just days after the Washington Free Beacon had called that group, In Defense of Christians, in a publication, quote, a hotbed of pro-Hezbollah and pro-Assad speakers. Well, Senator Cruz accepts the invitation and goes to speak with them, for them, at the gala event. He's up on stage and he asks the group to stand with Israel. Well, he had to leave the stage and depart from the event because of the negative uproar that that simple request caused out of the audience In Defense of Christians. So that's right here in the United States. Now, I will draw a line at the Trump administration, because as we've seen with earlier segments of this series, the Trump administration policies have been very different and very much more aggressive with Iran, and by extension with Hezbollah. They have, the administration, of course, has backed out of the Iran nuclear accord, has begun restarting, you know, Operation Cassandra, reopened that investigation into Hezbollah counter narcotics trafficking. The Trump administration has reopened Operation Cassandra investigations, for example, into Hezbollah narcotics trafficking. Here in the Western Hemisphere, in the United States, the money laundering that goes with it. So this is really good news that the Trump administration is taking a far tougher approach than did its predecessors towards both Iran and Hezbollah. Let's finish up this section here by noting that Hezbollah is a very sophisticated intelligence adversary, as well as for all the other criminal and terrorist reasons that we have discussed throughout the series of this presentation. Now, what we need to do and what our senior intelligence agencies need to do. And I will say that the DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration, CBP, Customs and Border Protection, FBI, and a special kudos to the Department of the Treasury, they've been on this. They're aware of this. But I think what's happening now is that under the Trump administration, they are free to move forward with such investigations and to put back on, if you will, their counterintelligence antenna as regards these intelligence capabilities of Hezbollah. Previously, and unfortunately, I think the intelligence community, with the exception, I will make this exception of the Treasury Department here, but had been prior to the Trump administration behind the curve, or perhaps simply deliberately backing off due to other considerations that we have discussed. Now, final advice on how to approach Hezbollah as an intelligence adversary, counterintelligence adversary. Think that the Hezbollah operative may not fit always the exact profile you might have in mind for a Lebanese Shiite. And the reason is that Hezbollah will work with anyone, be they Muslim, be they Lebanese, be they Shiite or not, that will help them to achieve their objectives, counter West, counter United States, counter Israel. And that we need to keep in mind, and so do our senior intelligence operations officials. Local law enforcement, though, is on the front lines, as with anything threatening the local communities. It will be those local police departments and sheriff's departments on the front line of defense against Islamic terrorism, against Hezbollah, and against Hezbollah's very sophisticated intelligence operations. Remember, local law enforcement would be at least one of those targets for Hezbollah to infiltrate, and precisely for this reason, to neutralize them as a counter to their own operations. Let's think in politically incorrect ways sometimes. Unfortunately, as we've talked about, Hezbollah often conceals itself within local Lebanese Shiite communities, not all of which by any means are complicit with Hezbollah, but some senior leadership figures of which might be and have been. All right, there are some new legal tools that have been brought to bear, even in years before the Trump administration came to office. And I'm looking at here at especially some of those Treasury Department measures, designations, International Financing Prevention Act, even the Counterterrorism Partnership Fund administered by the Department of State, that Law Enforcement Coordination Group that I've cited earlier, together with law enforcement agencies in Europe through Europol. So all of these things are tools in the hands of our intelligence and law enforcement agencies. Let's sum up here, though, to recall how threat convergence, that early matrix that I showed you back in segment one or two about Hezbollah, how all of these different nation states, subnational Islamic Jihad groups, international, transnational criminal organizations, and criminal organizations locally as well, all work together. Iran, Hezbollah, and others all working together. That we need to keep in mind. As well as the money launderers, the arms traffickers, the narcotics traffickers, all of those things extensively intertwined, and that would be the first thing to be aware of. All right, let me conclude this segment, segment 11, in our 12-part series about Hezbollah. I'm Claire Lopez, Lopez Liberty, LLC, online, social media, on Twitter, at Claire M. Lopez, Facebook, Claire Lopez. And if you would like to reach me by way of email, I'm at claire@theunitedwest.org. Thank you very much.